I'm Charlie Shelton Ormond. This is Test It from WUNC, a look at how North Carolina is dealing with COVID-19 and what we're learning about ourselves in the face of a global crisis. Today, the wrong direction. It's been about 2.5 weeks since North Carolina moved into phase 2 of its gradual reopening. Since that step, some of the state's key COVID-19 metrics haven't been trending in the ways North Carolina leaders hoped. For example, the number of hospitalizations hit a new high Tuesday. DHHS reported 774 people in the hospital with COVID-19. This peak comes after North Carolina also saw its single highest day of new cases reported over the weekend. These numbers beg more questions about the possibility of reopening the state further, or what Governor Roy Cooper calls Phase 2.5. That would allow bars and gyms to open in some capacity ahead of Phase 3. And so health experts are eyeing the data trends with caution. Here's DHHS Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen on Monday.
I am concerned. These trends moving in the wrong direction is a signal we need to take very seriously. One of the drivers of this increase is more movement.
Cohen said that more movement was catalyzed by the start of Phase 2. And now, 2 weeks later, the results are coming in and we're seeing the aftermath of that step. Meanwhile, most hospitals in North Carolina haven't yet been overwhelmed with COVID-19 patients. But that isn't stopping their staff from keeping a close eye on what might be coming down the line.
A lot of what we're doing now is really just still preparing because you never know what's around the curve.
Dr. David Wohl is an infectious disease physician at UNC School of Medicine in Chapel Hill. He also runs a COVID-19 diagnostic center at UNC Medical Center.
With reopening and with the demonstrations and other mass events, I do worry that we're going to continue to see new cases, including new hospitalizations. So we're not letting our guard down at all. I think, in fact, we're bracing.
Dr. Wohl says for him, predicting the road ahead relies heavily on a key metric. It's the one that set an unfortunate new record on Tuesday, hospitalizations.
Yeah, what really helps me understand where we're at is hospitalization, because that's more objective. If you've got COVID-19 and you're sick with it, it may just be a fraction of the people who have COVID-19, but it's probably a stable proportion. And so if we're seeing more people get hospitalized with COVID-19, that means it's the tip of the iceberg is bigger, but that means probably the iceberg below the surface is bigger too. So it's a bigger tip. And I feel when we see hospitalizations go up, I'm very nervous. When I see hospitalizations really go down, I'm very optimistic.
We've heard DHHS Secretary Dr. Mandy Cohen also express concern over the number of hospitalizations and some other metrics. And she said one of the drivers of these upticks is more movement. And it seems like that movement among people has only increased in the last couple of weeks. So what are you thinking about or concerned about that is happening right now that we will start to see show up in the data in about 2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah, exactly. It's not something that you see instantly. It is about a 2 to 3 week delay before some activity, some mass gathering, and then an increase, an uptick in the number of cases or the number of people who are sick. And so, you know, it's yet to be seen what all the events recently of reopening and also with the mass gatherings, what effect they're going to have. I mean, it's hard not to imagine that some transmission will occur as more people get together. And so that's what concerns me. Like the worst thing you can imagine as an infectious disease specialist in the midst of a pandemic is people getting together. And you know, I totally get why we need to be out there. I would like us to be out there separated. We could still make a huge statement. In fact, it's even more of a statement because you take over more space as you spread out like a gas instead of a solid, right? So, you know, space out, demonstrate not only against what you don't like and for the things you like, but also demonstrate to others a model for how to do this. And there are there are folks who are doing that. And I think that's what we should do, all of us, no matter if we're out there demonstrating, we're at home, or we're in a restaurant. You know, we should always be careful not to infect somebody else if we could potentially be infectious.
And related to hospitalizations, how do you feel about the current number of ICU beds available in the state? That's beds in the intensive care unit. The most recent report shows that 17% of ICU beds are still available. I'm imagining that is a similar category of alarm compared to the hospitalization cases.
Yeah, it's definitely something to keep track of. I think hospitalization numbers also could be looked at in a bunch of different ways, as you mentioned. Regular hospital beds versus ICU beds. And at least for UNC Healthcare, we have a dashboard where we can look at this in real time, like every day. We look at this dashboard and see what our capacity is. So right now, we're good. You know, we prepared and had been preparing and still are preparing for an increase in cases, including ICU cases. So I feel right now we're in good shape. I'm not concerned, you know. 6 weeks ago, we were all concerned because we didn't know what was going to hit us. The good news about what's happened is that this slow surge that we've had, rather than a spike, has given us more and more time to prepare. We're waiting for the storm, but the storm is just moving so slowly. You have more time to prepare and stock up and board up. And that has given us a lot of time. New York didn't have that time, right? Seattle, no way. New Orleans, we've had that time.
So you also have experience researching the Ebola virus in West Africa. What have you discovered from that research that can be applied to the COVID-19 pandemic? Do you see much overlap between the two?
You know, when I was in West Africa during Ebola time, there was social distancing. People took it seriously. It took a while, just like it took a while here, but people followed through. Nobody wanted to get sick. I've been really struck by how in this country, we really have done a great job. And that's why we didn't see the numbers that the models were predicting, because the models didn't predict how well we would do what we needed to do. And I think that's fantastic. And I think we have to learn that lesson. The people who are getting infected now, by and large, are people who cannot social distance. These are people who work in factories, people who work on farms, people in nursing homes, people in correctional facilities. There's a lesson there. So if you can't social distance and that's who's getting infected, the more we become like them, the more we don't social distance, the more we let down our guard and don't protect ourselves and others, we will see more infections. It's not rocket science. We're seeing Latinx people getting infected, not because they're Latinx, but because they work in these environments and live in these environments. And that's who we're disproportionately seeing getting infected right now in our area. And I think that's a very, very important and problematic reality. And I think as we start moving ahead towards trying to normalize things, it's a cautionary tale. We don't want to be in the same situation. And social distancing has made the difference. And there's good ways that we can do all the things we want to do in the future. And people are thinking really hard about that. You know, how do you get your hair cut? How do you get your teeth cleaned? How do you send your kid to summer camp? How do we go to libraries? How do we go to movies, to pools? It's not going to be exactly the same. It's all done to reduce risk. And unfortunately, until the cases evaporate, that's what we're going to have to do.
Dr. David Wohl is an infectious disease physician at UNC School of Medicine in Chapel Hill. He also runs a COVID-19 diagnostic center for UNC Medical Center. Hang tight, more in a moment.
This is a good time to say thank you to everyone who supports WUNC. Whether you are an individual donor or a business, we can't say thank you enough for providing us with the resources and opportunity to serve the state of North Carolina with up-to-the-minute news and information. Everyone at WUNC is working around the clock to do just that at this unique and perilous moment in our history, and we couldn't do it without your help. So thank you, and if you are able, please go to WUNC.org if you want to donate for the first time or to increase your support.
thousands of people gathered in Rayford in southeastern North Carolina to pay their respects to George Floyd over the weekend. Floyd was born close to Rayford in Fayetteville and still has family in the area. WUNC reporter Liz Schlemmer was in Rayford covering the memorial. She said there were things in place to accommodate such a large group while maintaining health and safety. Hand sanitizer was available, and people were spaced out when they walked inside the church to stand in front of the casket.
Many people I saw throughout the day were wearing face coverings, sometimes with messages like, "I can't breathe," or other messages about George Floyd. And there, you know, there was some distancing, but it also just felt like a natural moment for people to be in the same place and to show up together.
Much like Floyd's public memorial in Minneapolis last week and one in Houston on Monday, attendants in North Carolina were compelled to show up at a time when social distancing is important for public health. Angela Caraway says it was a necessity to come together on Saturday as a community to honor him as more than a victim of police brutality.
You know, we're about love, and we had no other choice but to be together when they brought us over here from Africa. We had to come together. So that's what we know. It's in our DNA to come together when somebody else is hurting.
I think everyone I talked to just said it was natural to be there, you know, to show up. Some people said they hadn't protested or they hadn't been able to protest because they needed to work, but this was something that they could do.
Krishan Royal was also there. He says the tragedy of Floyd's death drew him to the service, but seeing Floyd sparked a feeling of hope.
You get like this intense feeling a little bit, you know, it comes. And, you know, all you can do is just, you know, lift your head up in the sky and know everything's going to be all right. But, you know, but I was just glad I was able to see him and stuff. He looked really well. He was very good. And, you know, he's going to be in a good place. God has him.
George Floyd's funeral took place Tuesday in Houston, where he spent most of his life. He was buried next to his mother. That's it for Tested Today. I'm Charlie Shelton Orman. Lindsay Foster Thomas is our executive producer. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. Thanks for listening. Dave DeWitt returns next time. See you then.